Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. So we've seen an awful lot about the kneeling. How dare those people kneel during the NFL games? They're disrespecting the flag. So, well, again, I look at what Trump has done and masterfully, completely taken what the protests by the NFL players were completely out of the equation. I'm actually all in favor of people having the right to kneel. I'm not going to do it, but I think everyone should have the right to. But again, you go back to this, why are they doing it? The treatment of African-Americans and minorities in this country, in most places, is abysmal. It's terrible, it's horrible, and it's unfair. And what they were saying, they're highlighting the fact that this is what's going on. And no more is this, well, this discrimination, this inequality, evident than in our criminal justice system. And this week, on Tuesday and Wednesday, you had community leaders, activists, criminal justice folks, elected officials, business people, all kinds of people coming together in New York City for the Smart on Crime Innovations Conference. And here to talk about what went on at the conference, I've got Ed Chung. He's the vice president of the Criminal Justice Policy Program there at the Center for American Progress. Ed, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick. Thanks for having me.
So give me a broad overview. What were you guys talking about?
Yeah, well, I like the fact that you started here with talking about the kneeling and so forth, because one of the key people that we had was former NFL wide receiver Anquan Boldin, who was talking exactly about these issues and the going beyond the kneeling aspect of what's going on in the criminal justice system and in policing across the community. And so what we did was we brought together exactly the people that you said, business leaders, activists, communities, foundations, people who are working at this. And there's a lot of rhetoric out there that's looking to put policies back in place that really focus, again, on arresting more people and incarcerating more people. And across the country, cities and states are saying that there's a better way to do this. There's a smarter way to do this. And so we looked at different parts of or different strategies that are being used, whether it is in policing or whether it's in community activism or whether it's technology, things that are actually happening on the ground, because you need more than speeches. You need more than rhetoric. We need to show people what is actually happening in communities across the country, and there's a lot going on.
Yeah, there is a lot, but, you know, I look at the rhetoric coming out of the White House, and, you know, you got Donald Trump, who's, you know, the bad hombres, and all we need to do is let police do their jobs. You know, all these people are getting in the way. You know, that messaging, I think, is dangerous.
Yeah, absolutely. It's absolutely dangerous, and it's also then buttressed by the fact that his attorney general is changing policies and taking us back. And this is not just rhetoric that I'm saying. This is actually what is happening, taking us back to policies that have already been discredited. So when you're talking about DOJ funding or federal law enforcement efforts, putting more emphasis on arrests and then telling U.S. attorneys that we need to address violent crime through more arrests, and we're going to up those numbers, and the Bureau of Prisons is projecting more people incarcerated because of these changes in policies, that's a real problem. So we really need to work with our local law enforcement, local communities, to say that is not the only way. There is a different way. And there are police leaders, community leaders, and prosecutors and others that are changing things. We just need to show people more through this conference, through what's happening afterwards, but also way beyond that.
Right, but the simple messaging, Ed, is that these criminals need to be punished. I mean, there's that basic, you know, playing to our natural bit of fairness. You break the law, you know, go back to the 70s TV show Beretta. If you can't do the time, don't do the crime.
Yeah, and so there's two parts to this. I don't think we had a lot of people who were formerly incarcerated and justice involved at this conference. And I don't think anybody there would say that they shouldn't be held accountable for their action. But there's two things. One, after you have been held accountable for your action, what's the best way to make sure that public safety is enhanced and those people who have served their time are and have been held accountable are now productive members of society? So that's on the one side. But then on the front side, the question is whether or not our laws are actually doing the right thing by, quote unquote, holding people accountable through our criminal justice system and keeping them in prison and jails much longer, or even in the first place, putting them in prison and jails for social issues. I mean, you look at the issue of violent crime in this country, and we always demonize people for being violent people. But the difference here is that being labeled a violent person under the criminal justice system has a real stigma attached, even though they may not have committed more violent acts than other people around the country in terms of, you know, bar fights or getting in fights with, you know, different places and so forth,
right.
So or different people. And so there's a real issue of how we treat social issues, whether the criminal justice system is the appropriate method to do that.
Yeah, and it's always been insane to me that, you know, look, I believe it, you do your time, you do your retribution, your restitution, you do all that stuff. At the end of it, it should be done. You should be able to move on. And the fact that we saddle people with criminal records that will never allow them to get employment and that we preclude in many states them from being able to vote just seems to me more of the retribution, more of the punitive end of what we've been doing to folks.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And there are states across the country that are looking to make sure that those collateral consequences are being reduced. There's actually a bill going through the Pennsylvania legislature right now. It's a bipartisan bill. It's called Clean Slate. And after a period of, you know, you've done your time or you've paid your penance and whatever you want to say, and you have remained crime-free for a number of years, then there is an automatic sealing process. And that's what the bill would do. And that's what's going through the Pennsylvania legislature. And so it's innovative things like that that are happening. And really, when people are trying to clean up their records, get things sealed and expunged, and we're not talking about, you know,
rapists and murderers.
Crimes.
You're not talking about rapists and murderers.
Right. We're talking about low-level crimes here of being sealed. Then that the process to get that sealed is really difficult. And so this bill that's going through the legislature is talking about automatic sealing as long as you meet the conditions there. So it's things like that that are really positive, and hopefully those things will come to fruition soon.
Yeah, I've had friends who in the past, you know, got in trouble when they were 18, 19 years old, and they're in their 40s, 50s, and it's still around their neck.
Yeah, absolutely. And we hear rhetoric all the time, like, why can't they get a job? Why can't they just, you know, change the way they are? But if you have that criminal record on you, and you, as an employer, you look at that, or as somebody who's giving you a loan, you look at that, it's really difficult to then have opportunities later on in life. And so this is not about giving people a free pass. It's about we as a society, how can we, what do we need for increased public safety in the future, and what can we do to help people, you know, change course in life or have a first opportunity in the first place, so that it does increase public safety and that people are, you know, on the path that they need to be on.
Yeah, I remember years ago I was a shop steward at the place I worked, and a kid had gotten hurt on the job. He was 28 years old. When he was 19 years old, he had committed a felony, and he didn't write it down on his application. So when he got hurt on the job, the first thing they did is they did a background check on him, and they found this unreported felony. So the day he got off of workman's comp, they fired him.
Right, and what's going to happen to that, you know, to that kid or to that person now that they don't have a job, and going forward, what are the opportunities that are there? So, you know, we've heard, you know, policies like ban the box, which is a good first step, meaning that you don't ask for the criminal record at the early stages. You may want to look at it later. Or you look at policies where people consider a criminal record in context, right? How many years has it been since then? Is it relevant to the job application? And things like that. If there's more thought put into a particular criminal record or a person's history, then the better it is. And I think that's the entire idea behind Smart on Crime. We don't want to have policies, whether it's in society or in government, off of gut feeling. We want it to have thought into it. And I think too many times in our country's history and in our government's history, we've done things by gut reaction and just, you know, what feels right instead of putting thought behind it. And that's the entire emphasis that we try to make during the Smart on Crime Innovation
Conference. Yeah, I point to most of the Clinton era rhetoric of, you know, three strikes and you're out, and, you know, we're going to put more cops on the streets, and we're going to crack down on crime. And basically all they really did was lock up a lot of poor people for, you know, what, you know, 20 years before weren't even really enforced crimes.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I mean, that's how the sausage is made in a lot of ways, right? I've had the opportunity to glance behind how Congress works, and sometimes it is really just the reaction to the political news of the day or the social news of the day. And here is a good, easy thing, or I shouldn't say good, but here's an easy thing that we can do to address that, and that's increasing sentences or putting more crimes on the books. And there is not that real thoughtful, intelligent, strategic, long-term analysis of what we need before we reactively put policies in place, and that's unfortunate.
What do you say to the person that you said, yeah, this is just hippie liberal kind of utopian thinking? They're criminals, they need to be punished, and we need, you know, the hard hand. This kid glove stuff doesn't work.
Well, I say to them that it's not only a hippie liberal thing. It is, you know, we had as a speaker and a person on our steering committee, the general counsel from Koch Industries, and, you know, I don't agree with a lot of things that Koch Industries says on many issues, but on this one, on criminal justice, they are as progressive as many people on the left. And so this is not a partisan issue. It's not even a bipartisan issue. It's a nonpartisan issue. People are understanding that it is not about giving people free passes. That's not it at all. If you want to increase public safety, and if you really want to keep your community safe, what are you going to do with just locking people up and then many of them come back after a year, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years? What's going to happen with those people? They're part of your community again, whether you like it or not. They're part of your community. So what are we as a society and what are we as a government going to do to increase public safety and also help people in our community? Yeah. And so it's not just, you know, feel good approach. It is real public safety policies that is being considered.
Especially when it costs more to send someone to prison than it does to send them to college. And I would argue part of our for-profit prison system is a big driver in all this as well. But it just seems to me very short-sighted to pursue these kind of policies of, you know, making sure that recidivism remains high to keep heads in beds.
Yeah, I think it's an easy solution. And again, easy is not good, and easy is not always the best. I think it's generally speaking, and you mentioned the for-profit industry, private prison industry. You have people lobbying for more people in beds, and that's how contracts are made. And so when the entire business model of an industry that's supported by the Trump administration is advocating for more people in jails for a business motive and for a profit motive, that seems like it is something that is pretty out of whack.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems bizarre to me. So last question I've got for you, because, you know, you in going back to the national anthem protests and the message that originally was to come, was out of that, which is police brutality and the treatment of minorities. You know, how do we as a society, because I think it starts at that ground level. I think it starts at the relations between, police and the community. Is how do you rebuild that trust? How do you build that trust? How do we, is there a way of making that better going forward?
Yeah, so it's a real hard process, as we know. And when I was working in the Justice Department, we worked with several cities to try to do a somewhat comprehensive effort to push this and to push efforts such as, let's train police differently. Let's have police try to look at people differently. And let's put in de-escalation tactics and appropriate violence reduction policies that aren't the same old way. I'll tell you, it is a years-long process, and it is a difficult process. But there are some cities that are making some headway. You can look at places in California, in Stockton, California, and others. You can look at places in even in Pennsylvania, in Pittsburgh, that are starting to do these types of things, implicit bias training and so forth. Now, I'm not saying those types of trainings is the end-all, be-all. In a lot of communities, you need a holistic analysis. You need a holistic change. You need somebody to help push those changes, and you need community involvement. But there is hope. There are police departments, police chiefs, and police officers that are wanting to do it. It's just it's been years in the making, and it doesn't just change over a period of several months or a year. It's going to take years to change the other way as well.
There you go. Ed, I appreciate the time, and I appreciate some of your thoughts. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much.
Good talking with you. Ed Chung, Vice President of for Criminal Justice Policy there at the Center for American Progress. You want to check out their stuff, we'll get a link at the RickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back. Stick around.